It is amazing in this day, in this age, the amount of information that we have on leadership. Throughout the month, I get bulletins sent by way of email to me from Rick Warren about leadership, from John Maxwell, who has his own organization in Atlanta, Georgia. I get information about leadership from financial groups that are doing a great job in that area. You know, even 10 years ago or 15, there was just not the amount of information available on leading and guiding and all of these things. With the advent of the internet, it has made it amazingly easy to get a lot of information. And as we look at these leaders and see what God has allowed them to do, we marvel and we say, wow, that's really neat. But you know, with every one of these individuals, they had to start somewhere. They had to start, and we're seeing some of these people, you know, at age 50 and even older than that, as leaders today, but we need to remember where they started and how they started, and each one of them has a story. And so what I'd like to do for the next couple of weeks is talk about becoming leaders, but those first steps, way back at the beginning where the process is really starting in their lives. And so what we're going to do is look at a leader today, really kind of get launched and move out, and we're going to look at three keys that are going to be very helpful to us as we evaluate ourselves and we determine what are some of these things that we need to do to continue to move along in being God's leader. So the title of this series is called Becoming God's Leader, and that's really what we want to do with our lives, and leadership in a church or in other organizations is at many levels. So at many levels, we want to talk about becoming God's leaders. Today, we're going to look at a leader's first steps. We're going to be in 2 Kings. And so if you want to open to that, and I believe, what page was that on? That was on about page, there we go, thank you. It's on page 260. Interesting to think about this. If you think about John Maxwell, and I've heard his story, when he was 22 years old, he began in a very small church back in Indiana. And God moved him along that process. You talk about Rick Warren, the Saddleback Church and Purpose Driven Ministries. And he'll tell you about the day they drove into Southern California, over into Orange County. They had nothing, absolutely nothing but a U-Haul behind them. And so we see their ministries today and we marvel, but yet they all started back somewhere. And what we want to do is kind of start today with the leader's first steps. Now, in our story, what's going on is we've been studying Elijah. So for the last 10 weeks, we've looked at the life of Elijah. And we've seen him go up and down. And we've seen him blessed by God. And we've seen him struggle because he is just like us, as the New Testament book of James tells us. Well, Elijah hit the top of the mountain, literally, for a period of time when he confronted 450 prophets of Baal. But then not long after that, he went down into the valley. And he actually went into depression and actually had thoughts of suicide, as we've studied. And so God began to rehabilitate him. And we talked about a counseling session that God had with him where he took care of his physical needs and he heard his emotional needs. And then he sent him back into service. One of the things he needed to do in terms of getting back into service was to go anoint this guy named Elisha to be his successor. And a couple of weeks ago, we actually saw that story as Elijah is walking along and he comes up to Elisha, who is plowing. And he takes his mantle off and he puts the mantle on him. And we talked about the significance of that. And Elisha understood what that was all about. And he had a little farewell, a little barbecue. Remember, they took all the yoke of oxen and they cut up the wood and made a barbecue. And they had a barbecue on the site. And then what we did is we just took a few minutes at the end of that message and looked at the next three chapters in 1 Kings. And I kind of took you on a jet tour through them to say Elisha was there. It's about Elijah and his ministry, but Elisha was in the background and just trying to think of some of the thoughts that Elisha may have. Well, by the time we get to 2 Kings, and we're looking at chapter 2, they've been together now 10 years. It's hard to believe that, but that's what my research found, is that they have been together now 10 years, and in 2 Kings, really Elijah is going to be taken from Elisha and from the nation of Israel. What we want to do is just look at about 14 verses this morning and tell that story and then talk about some things that I hope will be very helpful to you as we go on and we look at becoming God's leader and taking those first steps, because we all have to begin somewhere. Amen? All right, here we go. Chapter 2 of 2 Kings. When the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way to Gilgal. So they're walking together, as was their custom. Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here. The Lord has sent me to Bethel." But Elisha said, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So they went down to Bethel. So they start out the day, and they're heading to a place called Bethel, and it's actually going to take them a while to get there. It's not an easy walk and hike. And Elijah says, "Just stay here. You'll be all right." And Elisha says, "No. I've been with you now for 10 years. I'm going to stay with you." And so he says, "Let's go on." And they continue to walk. Verse 3, "The company of the prophets at Bethel came out to Elisha and asked, 'Do you know that the Lord is going to take your master from you today?' 'Yes, I know,' Elisha replied, 'but do not speak of it.'" So they come upon a group of prophets, and the prophets come over to Elisha when Elijah's moved away, maybe for a minute, and said, "You know, he's going to be taken away." He says, "I know he's going to be taken away, but I'm going to stay here. I'm going to be with him. I understand this. Thank you for that good word." All right. Then Elijah said to him, "Hey, stay here, Elisha. The Lord has sent me to Jericho." And he replied, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So they went to Jericho. And again, to go to Jericho from Gilgal was not an easy trip. And I mean, you think just a short little walk in the park, and it actually takes some time to get there. The weather, the conditions were difficult. So it's not easy for Elijah to do this, but Elisha says, "No, I'm not going to leave you." Kind of says the same thing. Look at this, verse 5, guess who comes out? "The company of the prophets at Jericho went up to Elisha and asked him, 'Do you know that the Lord is going to take your master from you today?'" Sounds like a broken record, doesn't it? "Yes, I know," he replied, "but do not speak of it." All right, so it happens again, and another group comes out and makes sure that he knows this. Then Elijah said to him, verse 6, "Stay here, the Lord has sent me to the Jordan." And he replied, what do you think he's going to say? "I'm not going to leave you." Here we go again. "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So the two of them walked on. All right, now they're coming to the Jordan River. The problem with the Jordan River is, in order to get where they needed to go, they had to cross the Jordan. And the Jordan is not an easy river to cross at many places. And this thought was in the back of their mind. All right, here we go again. Guess who's going to meet him? 50 men of the company of the prophets went and stood at a distance facing the place where Elijah and Elisha had stopped at the Jordan. So they're standing there together, and they're thinking, how are we going to get across this thing? Maybe Elisha is thinking that. Elijah already knows what he's going to do. But they're standing there, and there are people that are observing them. Verse 8. Elijah took his cloak, rolled it up, and struck the water with it. The water divided to the right and to the left, and the two of them crossed over on dry ground. All right, so they came to this barrier, this border, that was a natural one. And so Elijah took like a mantle or something, went over to the edge and just snapped it down. It hit the water and the waters parted. This is the last miracle that we see of Elijah before he's taken up to be with the Lord. And so at this point, there's people watching this, and Elijah and Elisha cross the Jordan, and the two of them stand there, and they're going to have a conversation when we continue on in this area. Now, it's interesting. That's a story. What exactly is going on here? And we look at that and we say, well, this is just a story of dedication of Elisha to Elijah, and clearly it is. That's clearly what's going on here, and I'm not going to leave you. I'm going to hang in there and remain faithful to you until the end. And really what Elisha is doing is he is continuing at this point to serve Elijah up till the very last minute. He purposed to continue to serve Elijah up to the very last minute. And I think this gives us something that we need to think about, something that we need to be doing as we begin to take those first steps or those initial steps in serving God. So on your outline, a statement here, in order to become a leader, okay, now drop down after you fill in the word leader. First statement is this: you must be serving in a ministry. You must be serving in a ministry. See, what's going on here is he is serving him till the last minute. And the next verse, we'll see in an instant, everything changes. But you must be serving in a ministry. And this is, I think, a critical example for us when we look to people who are preparing and God is moving along to be leaders. You first of all have to be serving in a ministry, because your leaders really have to be servers. They have to be. And they have to go through that process of serving God. So honestly, the experiences that they would gain, that we would gain in serving, will pay dividends as that person continues to go on and to become a leader. You must be serving in ministry. When's the last time you served in a ministry? And I know a lot of you are serving in ministries, but when's the last time you served in one? How often are you serving in a ministry? What's your spiritual gift? At the point of salvation, 33 things happen. George Conley and I looked over, I brought a pamphlet. Do you remember that? 33 things that happen the point you come to faith in Jesus Christ. And it's put out by a well-recognized seminary. One of those is that you get and receive the Holy Spirit. And when the Holy Spirit comes in, it gives you a gift. What's your gift? Do you know? God has put you together in a very unique way with a spiritual gift and with natural talents and abilities. And all of these things are designed for you to discover and ultimately for you to use to serve God. Now what we do is we have a class here called Class 301, which I'll be doing in the fall. And you discover your spiritual gift. You need to know what your spiritual gift is. If you're going to be a leader of any kind, especially in a church, you need to know or have an idea what your spiritual gift or gifts are, and have an idea of how you can use them. And a lot of times, the best way you find out what those are is you actually try serving in a number of different ways in a number of different areas to discover those things. You know, you think about this, and you think about these great leaders, in this case, in the Old Testament. The first thing they did is they served. And we see in the life of Elisha, it's 10 years, folks. Sometimes we get so impatient. God, why aren't you doing more with me? Why can't I move along this track, so to speak, faster? And recognize God's timing is perfect. 10 years they've been together. Now, Elisha, I'm sure, has done more things. We don't have a lot of it recorded, though. We only have what God has given us. I think we need to be patient as God works in our lives and continues to prepare us to be leaders. Okay? He served him all the way up to the very last minute. So they go through the Jordan. They're standing on the other side now, and Elijah turns to Elisha. And he's going to ask him a question. And it's actually a very interesting question. And let's take a look at that as we continue on then with verse 9. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me, what can I do for you before I am taken from you?" Let me inherit a double portion of your spirit, Elisha replied. You have asked a difficult thing, Elijah said. Yet, if you see me when I am taken from you, it will be yours, otherwise not. As they were walking along and talking together, suddenly a chariot of fire, the horses of fire, appeared and separated the two of them. And Elijah went up to heaven in a whirlwind. Elisha saw this and cried out, my father, the chariots and the horsemen of Israel. And Elisha saw him no more. Then he took hold of his own clothes and tore them apart. And we have Elijah going to heaven. Did he die? No. You ever asked a trivia question? This is one person in the Bible that did not die. They were taken to heaven in a chariot of fire. So just remember that. I was in some trivia game sometime not too long ago, and this question was in there. It's Bible trivia, I think. So be sure that you get that one right. All right. So he says this. Can I have a double portion of your spirit? Now, that sounds kind of interesting. Actually, what this means is that, you know, I don't want a ministry that's twice as big as yours or twice as large. Sometimes we might think of it being that way. It's that Elijah, if it pleases God, I would like to continue the ministry that you are doing. I want to continue serving God. I've been with you for 10 years, and I want to continue the ministry that you have had. And the way he said it is, I want a double portion of your spirit. And if you look and you study this, it's not about size of ministry, and it's not about a request that might be perceived by us in the English as something, you know, like he's asking for something more. He's really not. And Elijah says, well, you know, I can't do that. It's up to God to do that. And he said, but if you see me, then it will happen. And so what he did, they're walking along. All of a sudden, I don't know how this happened, a chariot of fire, this must have been really cool, came down just and separated them. The chariot stopped, and Elijah stepped onto the chariot, and the chariot then took off and started going up to heaven. I mean, that must have been pretty cool to see that, a chariot of fire. Imagine what that looked like. Some of our ideas and the way they can do in movies now and whatnot, they could have fun with that one if they ever did something on the life of Elijah and Elisha. But it was an amazing scene of what took place, and Elisha did see him go, and Elisha saw him as he kept going, and then he does something that's very common in that part of the world. He recognized that it was the end of their time together in ministry. And so in terms of demonstrating grief and loss, he took and tore his clothing. And we see that often. It's just a very symbolic act that he did. He tore his clothing in just knowing that this was going to be the end until he went to heaven and saw Elijah again. And so he's standing there. Now you have to understand, there's people that are still seeing this, that are watching this from a distance. And this has a lot to do with what's going to happen in next week's message. Because this example, what takes place here, people are seeing, and this word is going to spread all over the area about how Elijah was taken to heaven and who and what Elisha did. So you look at these four or five verses here and you say, wow, what's here? Well, what's for us? And really, as we're looking at that, I think it's fairly simple. It's okay to ask to be the next leader. It's okay to ask the current leaders that you would like to be in the process of becoming the next leader. So on your outline, we must desire to become a leader. You know what? It's okay to desire that. Sometimes we get the idea, well, that's a bit arrogant, or that's a bit, you know, that's asking quite a bit, isn't it? Well, we have an example here of him asking to be the next leader and to be able to carry on the work and the ministry that Elijah has been doing. And so he asked this. And I think by example, it's okay for us to go ahead and ask for something like that. And to do that. And we need people to help here at Lake Hills Community Church. We need people that are in a process to continue along to serve God for the rest of their life. Because this is about the rest of your life. Maybe not here, but for the rest of your life in a variety of places where God may lead you to serve Him. And every experience you gain is valuable experience and helpful experience. What we're looking for are three words in people, and write these down off to the side. The first one is faithful. If you say you're going to do it, do it. Be faithful. If you say you're going to do it, do it. Second is available. Available. And here is the fact that you need to evaluate. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago. If you've got too much going on, get rid of some stuff. Not church stuff, but get rid of some stuff. Make more time for God in your life. You've got to be available. If you're never around, if you just show up on Sunday, and it makes it really tough to get involved. You've got to be available. And the T, teachable. People that are teachable. That's not saying that we know it all, because we don't know it all. We're not know-it-alls around here. Amen? Watch it. All right. We are not know-it-alls, but we need faithful, available, and teachable people that can come along steps with us and help us serve and reach this community and reach the world, because those are our goals here. Not only to reach this community, but to reach the world. And we do that in a variety of different ways. It is okay to ask to be the next leader. In fact, sometimes you can maybe approach somebody with something like this. You know, I've been here a while, and or I'm fairly new, and I'd like to be in a process of taking steps to move ahead, to be able to lead or to help lead in areas. Will you pray with me about that? Will you help me in that process? That's a great thing to ask. It is. It is. We need to keep having leaders, and it's okay to request that. In the New Testament, it talks about the office of elder, to aspire to the office of elder. And we see that in the New Testament as another example. A leader. So, here we have two little parts of this story where we see him go, and we need to check in our minds, are we serving? And then, just before he goes, he requests to be the next leader. And we see just, I think, a healthy example there of being in a process to be the next leader. Well, let's see what happens now. Just a couple more verses here. Let's look at this. Verse 13. He picked up the cloak that had fallen from Elijah and went back and stood on the bank of the Jordan. Then he took the cloak that had fallen from him and struck the water with it. Where now is the Lord, the God of Elijah? He asked. When he struck the water, it divided to the right and to the left, and he crossed over. All right, so Elijah's gone, and he's been through this clothes-tearing experience for the last minute or so, and then he knew this was his time. And so what was left? The only thing that was left was this mantle, or this garment that he had, kind of like a scarf, really. And he goes over and grabs it up. And again, you got to remember, there are people watching this. And he grabs it up, and he walks back over to the edge of the Jordan. And he's doing something here that is incredibly significant to us today. He takes it, and he says, God, if you're God, I'm trusting you. You're the God of Elijah, help me. And he goes down and he smacks the water in exactly the same way that Elijah did. What happened? Whoop! It parts again. And he can walk through and go to the other side. Now, there are people watching this and observing this. And that's where we're going to stop our story today. And what we're going to do is we'll pick up next week as we continue on. But what's amazing is what he has just done. What he has done is he has been with Elijah. He's observed all these miracles, and we've seen some of these as we've quickly followed his time of training. And then all of a sudden, it's now, if you will, it's now showtime. It's now put up or shut up for Elisha. And so it's very interesting what he does. You see, he had been following the example of Elijah. Nothing wrong with that. nothing wrong with that. But now he is a leader and he must demonstrate faith. This is a huge lesson. On your outline then, I'll tell you what. You must demonstrate your own faith. What is so neat is that we have people in our lives that have come before us. You've had other pastors, other people that have demonstrated faith. But when you come to the point where God allows you to be the leader in a variety of ways, you have to demonstrate your own faith. You cannot ride on the coattails of others. It's about you demonstrating your faith. Here, I think, is a dividing line about being a leader in the world and being a leader for God. God is looking for people like this. God is looking for people that will trust Him, that will demonstrate faith, and that's the kind of leader He wants. But without faith, it is what? It is impossible to please God, Hebrews 11:6. You're going to have to step out and demonstrate your own faith. That is huge. What He did here was amazing. It's not much for me to tell you the story, but the example for you and me today, it is huge. You're going to be a leader, you're going to have to demonstrate your own faith before God. It's great to have examples. It's great to follow on the coattails of others, but there comes a time where you got to demonstrate faith. This is the difference between the world and the church. We better demonstrate faith. If we don't, why do we even do this? So, back in 1986 to 1989, there was a really neat associate pastor, Church of the Open Door, Dale Woolery. And Dale modeled some amazing things for me. I wanted to be like Dale. That's okay. I want to be like Mike. I want to be like Dale. Dale was the executive pastor at that church. And my first big hurdle was just being on a pastoral staff. I wasn't sure I wanted to be a pastor. That's okay. God leads us in a variety of ways. Some people know from day one they want to be a leader or a pastor or something like that. I didn't. So from there, once I did that, then he worked with me and encouraged me and challenged me. And then I remember being almost devastated the day he resigned. And he resigned to go take another church, which was really cool for him. He needed to do it. In fact, it was out in Yorba Linda where he took this church. And I remember that, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness. And I've been studying this passage for, almost 20 years now. I remember seeing this and hearing about that and just seeing Dale go and recognizing how much faith he had demonstrated in God in a variety of ways. And it was just really, really exciting to me and to know that that was going to happen and to see what God did. To see what happened at that church and the opportunities over the next 5 years that God led me through. You know what? I never wanted to leave that church. I never wanted to leave that church. I wanted to be an associate pastor, probably the executive pastor. That's where I ended up at that church before I did leave, actually doing Dale's job. And God allowed me over the next 5 years. It took five more years to do this. A church of, it was 1,100. It was down to about 700 or 800 at that point. But I was doing that. And I said, this is really cool. I want to do this the rest of my life, God. God had other plans. He lets you go along and get what you need. And then He's going to put you in another circumstance, another place, another opportunity. And so it has to be your own faith. I hadn't demonstrated a lot of faith. I had done things on a pastoral staff, which is a good thing. And you do demonstrate faith at every level. And in fact, a lot of those things, at the next church I went to for 3 years, I did have the opportunity. But it wasn't until I came here to taunt you guys. I never would have come here if God didn't move me on from the first church and through the second church. Actually, the second church, I should have gone and been a senior pastor. But God had some things for me to learn. I was told that. And then I have come here. And it has to be about my faith. Now, Dale is a great example. And others, and they don't all have to be pastors, lay people, can be great examples. You can be great examples of demonstrating faith. But in coming here, it had to be me demonstrating faith, me taking the steps of leadership and working with a team and saying, I think we ought to try this and we ought to do this. And then you've got it just going all the way down through the different levels of leadership in every church. I think some of the greatest steps we've taken, one of them is going on mission trip, where the budget for missions in our church is about $5,000 for the year, and in 2005 we took five people and it jumped, in addition to that $5,000, another $15,000. That doesn't sound like a lot of money, but percentage-wise, it's huge. It's doubling and tripling the missions budget to do one trip. That took faith. And I remember being in that boardroom and talking to those men about this issue. I remember Bill Close saying, "We got to do it." Bill said that. "We got to do it. We got to demonstrate faith." That was such a neat thing back in late 2004 or so. That was one step. I think some of the other things we've done with campaigns and 40 Days of Purpose and what we're looking forward to this fall are steps of faith. And I've got to demonstrate it. And I have the privilege maybe of modeling it for you, but the reality is, you ever going to be a leader, you're going to have to step up and do this and trust God and follow Him and follow His guiding and His directing in your life. And there's nothing more exciting, nothing more challenging, nothing worth giving your life to more than this. There's nothing more important than this. Nothing. This is all about eternity. That's why I'm excited about Celebrate Recovery. And Mike Hornkull and I met with Patty and some of the other leaders and just talked about that, because they're having to step up, they're having to demonstrate faith, they're having to deal with all kinds of stuff. I can respect people that do that because they're taking those steps of faith.